The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Hey, very pleasant. Good afternoon. Welcome in. We are glad to be back in town. We were in Birmingham yesterday doing interviews with a number of people, from Charles Barkley to Kirby Smart, Hugh Freeze, Commissioner Sankey, and we will share all that with you throughout the program tomorrow. By now, some of you, if not many of you, have heard the very heartbreaking news that one of the all-time legendary callers, Phyllis Fomulga, who both excited and exasperated so many fans from across the country, and especially in Alabama, talking about her beloved Tide, has passed away. Her son, making the announcement, had a chance to talk to Christopher today about his mom, Phyllis Chapel Perkins, and he just wanted me to pass along the news to everyone and say how dearly she loved so many of you and how difficult her battle has been. He said that she beat lung cancer, she beat breast cancer, but in the end she was battling a multitude of issues, and it finally brought her life to an end yesterday. The service will be on Monday. We'll have more information throughout today and tomorrow on that, exactly the timing, but it will be Monday afternoon in Birmingham, somewhere in the Birmingham area, and we will update that as we move throughout the program. I know many of you will want to talk about her, and we certainly have the entire day today, plus forever, to remember Phyllis, and we certainly will do that. We also want to talk about a number of other things that are going on, we begin with Connor O'Gara. Always great to welcome Connor to our program. Connor, good afternoon. I apologize for starting on such a down note, but you understand the backstory of this show, and you understand what Phyllis meant to everyone.
No, I think it's incredible that you have such a community like that, that it means so much to so many people. I mean, to borrow the cliche, the fact that you have this group that is able to be so understood and heard on your airwaves, it's a very unique thing. And, you know, obviously thoughts and prayers with the family going through a difficult time right now.
And in just a few minutes, we will talk to Bob Lockamy, who helped originate this show many, many years ago, about Phyllis. But I do want to start with Connor, and, you know, talking to Kirby yesterday, Connor, talking to so many people as you do. All eyes now are on the upcoming college football season. We are here, finally. Everyone's talking about the over and unders, the best bets, and I know you are digging deep into who's going to make it to the Final Four when it's all over.
Yeah, the Final Four predictions have to come out in May. In my opinion, if you're coming out in August, you're probably listening to a little bit too much of the offseason noise. Are you picking based on what somebody else has said? I like to come out with mine in May, once we kind of know what that post-spring window looks like. Coaching changes are done. They're in the books by now. Hay is kind of in the barn. So, yeah, I mean, I came out with my predictions early, the very same predictions that 2 years ago you may or may not have, but definitely did make fun of me for putting Cincinnati in the playoff. We all know how that turned out. We don't need to go down the road of my picks last year. I may or may not have, but definitely did have Oklahoma in there. Might have also had Utah, ate a little bit of crow with that. But yes, playoff picks that are very much all over the place, they are out, and at least I feel like I can back them up.
Well, who's going to make it?
I thought you'd never ask. I got Washington as my four seed, being the first Pac-12 team to make the field since 2016, since, ironically enough, Washington did so. And that's with a Pac-12 that I expect to be really good this year. Four teams that could start off at or around the top 10, with also USC and Oregon and even Utah, a team that I was very much all in on last year. But I like Washington's path to be able to get there with all the experience that they return. And then I have Clemson actually having a bit of a bounce back year and getting that third spot. I think it's kind of lost in the shuffle of what Clemson did last year, even in a disappointing year. They were still 8-0 against the SEC, and they dominated the ACC championship. Yeah, obviously the blowout against Notre Dame. You get the Irish at home this year. Maybe that'll be a little bit different. You still can theoretically lose a game to South Carolina if that's going to become the new way of the world in the state of South Carolina and make it to the college football playoffs. So I have Clemson getting that three spot. And then I have Ohio State at two. All the guys they return, if you've looked at some of these way too early mock drafts, which I know you're all about, it's just loaded with Buckeyes, and especially on defense, a team that obviously played Georgia down to the wire. And then obviously Georgia is my one seed. If you don't have Georgia in your preseason playoff projection, I think you're doing it just to be different. You can't look at that schedule, look at what Kirby Smart did last year, 15 players to replace from the NFL draft and go 15-0, and not think that this team is also capable of doing that. So yeah, that's the four, the way that I see it as we sit here in the second week of May.
Connor, as we get beyond that, you don't have Alabama, you don't have LSU, Tennessee. We understand that. But just on those three, I am particularly interested in who of that group you see emerging as at least the next level.
Next level by mean winning a national championship?
Well, no, next level meaning almost made the playoffs.
I mean, I think Alabama is going to be the close but no cigar team again. I do. And I think Alabama, even though I'm arguing for them to be 11-1 to win the West and to get to an SEC championship against Georgia, I know I'm boring. I'm basic. I realize that if you want to be kind of a little bit rogue, you're supposed to pick LSU. I'm not in that territory just yet. I'll buy a little bit of that Alabama stock right now while it's kind of low. I have Alabama kind of on the outside looking in and being that team that just feels like, man, we got so unbelievably close. Maybe it's kind of shades of Georgia in 2018, a team that obviously entered the SEC championship and won with one loss, looked like it had everything right in front of it and was leading the SEC championship. And then we know what happens. Tua goes down, Jalen comes in, the rest is history. Maybe Alabama takes a page out of that 2018 Georgia playbook and is that team that's just kind of on the outside looking in.
In relation to LSU, you know how trendy it is to pick LSU over Alabama. Clearly, you're not buying that. Why not?
I'm not quite buying it because I don't know that it's going to be a lights-out defense in the way that some expect. Because the household names are there. Like, I'm not denying that. I mean, Harold Perkins, if he's not on your preseason All-America team, I don't know what you're talking about. Mason Smith, there's a reason why LSU fans were so excited last year and why he's already getting way too early first round buzz despite the fact that he missed off last year after going down the first series against Florida State. But I still have some questions about kind of how they look on the back end and if they're really going to be able to hold up that way. And this LSU offense, while it did show a lot of promise down the stretch, what are we going to get out of this ground game? It's been a minute since we've seen LSU kind of have that team that can really put it on you with the backfield. And yeah, Jaden Daniels can run the football a ton, but man, you don't need him running in the way that he did last year. You hope that he's going to be more comfortable with these receivers. I expect that'll be the case, but you know, coming off a year in which he carried the ball more than any quarterback in college football, you can't have that. He won't last an entire year. He's not really built to be that guy. So I just have some questions, and I think LSU could end up being like a 9-3 team who actually is better than it was last year, and it still could get left out of the SEC championship.
Connor, within the SEC, we talked about Bama, Georgia. You just mentioned LSU. Is there a school that, it's so difficult when you say, well, surprise, because that means they're expected to be poorly, but who makes a run? I mean, at least keeps it interesting. You mentioned South Carolina a minute ago. Is it South Carolina? Is it A&M? You know, who is going to take that next big step up?
A&M is the team that I continue to say they should be the most improved team in the SEC. Now, that's a year after I was saying that they're the most overrated team in college football coming into the season. So I think that if you're totally out on the Aggies, then you're probably not paying attention to the potential schematic change we question what it's going to look like, and I've talked about it on these airwaves, what it's going to look like with Bobby Petrino, if it's really going to work with Jimbo Fisher, two guys that have never had to answer to anybody on the offensive side of the ball in the last two decades, what all that's going to look like. But, man, if it works with what they return on offense, basically that entire offensive line, Connor Wigman, you return your top three receivers, it should be good and it should be promising. But you still need to be able to see what that looks like in order to get there. So, yeah, A&M is probably that team in the West. And, you know, South Carolina, they show the upside. There's no doubt about it. And they come into this year saying, we feel like we can play with anyone. They shouldn't be saying that they can play with Georgia because they haven't shown that they can do that yet. But South Carolina's got to get better in the trenches. Boston Shuffle, what they did last year, man, they have not been a good run defense. They have not had a good rushing offense. It worries me that they still have DK Joyner kind of filling in as that tailback, and it kind of speaks to the depth issues that they're potentially having there. So I'm just not quite all in. I'm a little bit more boring with my preseason projections, although those are the two that have obviously shown that they can play with anybody in their respective division, as long as we're not talking about South Carolina and Georgia.
Talking to Connor Aguirre, Connor, before you go, you've mentioned so many different schools. Not Ole Miss, though. They really have had quite an off season. Great quarterback room. You know the drill. What about them?
I'm a little bit befuddled by what we're going to see at the quarterback position because I haven't been a Jackson Dart guy yet. Maybe I will be this year. But I came into this spring thinking, man, Spencer Sanders is going to have a chance to take over that job. He'd still be my slight pick despite all the good buzz we're hearing about Jackson Dart. But I don't know. Ole Miss is in a spot where they are desperate to have a good defense. They haven't had a good defense since Hugh Freeze was there. And it feels like if you can get this best possible version of Pete Golding at Ole Miss, what does that look like? We still need to see that because they put way too much pressure on their offense, and I worry that they're going to put too much pressure on Quinshon Judkins, somebody who was a revelation as a true freshman, one of the best two or three running backs in all of college football. But I have so many questions about them on the defensive side of the ball, and we saw last year, it's really difficult to hold up if you don't have that area figured out. So I'm not quite there with saying that they're a 9 or a 10 team.
Connor Aguirre, always great when he joins us. Thank you very much, Connor. We take a break. When we come back, we will remember Phyllis from Mulga. We will talk to one of the first people who ever spoke to Phyllis on this show and really helped play a big role in developing her as one of the most iconic callers in the history of, forget this program. We're talking about talk radio. I saw several posts today, one from Richard Deitch, another from an ABC correspondent who said that she simply, one of her calls a couple of years ago may have been the greatest sports call-in show of all time. I think it probably was, and I think she may have been as on the very top level of the all-time callers to any sports show in America. We'll take a break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back. We're so glad you're here as we continue doing what we always do, but we are going to spend a great deal of time today, and I have a feeling for a long time, remembering Phyllis from Mulga, and we'll tell some stories and share some great memories. Probably one of the most amazing memories in the history of the show occurred with Phyllis, and I'll tell that story a little bit later on. I want to say hello to Bob Lockamy. Not only has Bob been a close friend for most of my adult existence, but for those of you who don't remember back, Bob really was the original guy who came up with he came up with the idea for this show, the very initial, the very original formation of the program. Bob was there on day one and was with us for a long, long time as the show grew, and really played a critical role in helping bring Phyllis from Mulga and many others onto the scene. Bob, first of all, good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on this afternoon that we spent a lot of time remembering back.
Well, Paul, thank you for the invitation and to have this opportunity to share some thoughts with you. And as your original sycophant sidekick,
Bob, for those who don't even remember the old Carson show, Bob used to say he was Ed McMahon, except Ed McMahon was a multimillionaire, Bob.
Yes, he was. he did well. Paul, I just want to say, and I was so touched in your opening comments and your comments, Twitter comments and all too, but your opening today, heartbreaking news. When I got your text yesterday afternoon, it just was, and you said it. I'm not sure what else could be said. To hear that news was so heartbreaking.
Bob, I've been asked today in various interviews about, you know, when Phyllis first came onto the scene, and I vaguely remember something. I'm not even sure I remember the first call, but I remember she was upset, I think, about something that we had said about Gene Stallings, because they had developed a friendship through her son, Christopher. Do you remember how she became what she ended up being?
Vividly, Paul. It's a moment that has stuck with me in so many different ways. As a matter of fact, I'll date myself here and the show. I have a cassette tape of that call. A cassette tape for a lot of your listeners going, what? Actually, Paul, and I think this is really something, her first call was not Phyllis from Mulga.
Okay.
It was Chris and his mom.
Oh, I do remember and
they were distraught. We had scheduled a guest, and he was on, a guy named Jersey Red. Jersey Red, and he ripped in. It was Iron Bowl week, 93.
Okay.
And Jersey Red ripped into Coach Stallings. I'm even hesitant to share some of the things.
Oh, yeah, it was brutal.
It was horrible and so uncalled for. And you know, you talked with Jersey Red, and then you said, let's take some calls. And I think the first or second call that you took was Chris and his mom.
Okay, I do remember that.
And Chris initially lit into Jersey Red. You know, you're talking about a 12 or 13-year-old young man at that time. And then Jersey Red ripped into Chris.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, his mom, Phyllis from Mulga, comes charging in, and Jersey Red had a classic line at that moment. He said, "Who am I talking to, Eckle or Jekyll? Jekyll or Hyde?" something like that. And Chris stepped aside, and Phyllis just lit into him and ripped him a new one, and basically shut him down. And that was the first call.
And Jersey Red was a character from, I think, he was friends with somebody we knew. It may have been Mike Godfrey. I can't remember.
It was Coach Godfrey, yeah.
And he was also a good friend, one of Rick Pitino's best friends. I mean, he had quite a following, this guy. And he sounded like anybody from Jersey would sound, obnoxious, snarky, whiny.
Yeah.
And Phyllis just literally took him apart, and it was, and that was the beginning of it. And I mean, we had had other, you know, well-known callers, Don from downtown, what, Liberty Bell, who else used to, Steve from Forest Park, remember those guys? I mean, this was like what I used to refer to as the Gemini Seven, the original. Excuse me, the Mercury Seven. I'll get my astronauts. The Mercury Seven. For those who don't know, that was the original group of astronauts that went. You know, John Glenn, you know, all these guys that, Alan Shepard, orbited the Earth. Orbited. You know, some of them didn't even. I think the first shot didn't even orbit the Earth. And that's who they were. And then Phyllis really started the next iteration of the show that fortunately is still going on.
And she was such a treat to work with, Paul, as you mentioned.
How did you get to know her behind the scenes?
Well, we put out, she called back and we had our phone screeners that said, when this call comes back in the next, and this was the Friday before the Iron Bowl. And she called the first part of the week, and so we were able to connect. And Paul, that led to some incredible times.
Now, Bob, am I right in remembering? I was with Pat Smith yesterday in Birmingham, and we were reminiscing. But you know, there's so much territory to cover. But this is part of the program that I don't think really gets enough attention. The embryonic days, but the first major feud in the show. And correct me if I'm wrong. Was Phyllis and B.O.B., am I correct?
Oh, without question. I recall, as you, that Bring On Bama, B.O.B., and Phyllis. But I guess one of the first Feinbaum phoner feuds.
Yeah. Well, we had done a little bit of it early on with – I picture this that shag carpeting at WAPI, and we would have Ray from Irondale and
that shag carpeting, Paul, was known as acoustics.
Yeah, it didn't work very well. It's more than we have now in a big television studio. These were minor compared to what we later had with Phyllis and B.O.B. and then of course I don't remember Tammy when she came along a little bit later, I'm pretty sure, but Phyllis was the original. I want to take a break because to me, Bob, if there's ever been a moment that I don't think we were able to preserve, that might have been the funniest program. I believe that Warren St. John depicted this briefly in his Rammer Jammer Yellowhammer book that came out about a season in the life of Alabama football. We'll get to that in a minute. And that was the trial of Phyllis. I'll try to remember all the characters, but we'll talk about that with Bob Lockamy in a moment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back as we remember Phyllis from Mulga on this Thursday afternoon, talking to Bob Lockamy, who was there on day one of the Feinbaum show back in, December of 1988, I think it was, Bob, talking about how Phyllis came aboard a couple of years later. Recalling this moment. I believe it was 99. Because I remember Warren St. John being there, and Phyllis had uttered a profanity on the air, and we felt like it had violated the policy of the show, and we suspended her. Am I remembering the story correctly, as best you can?
I think, yes, Paul. I think she spoke her mind.
Yeah.
And spoke her heart.
I don't remember. I don't remember all the people, but I'm pretty sure we had John Falkenberry there that night.
Correct.
Who was the advertising guy? I remember he came too. You know what I'm talking about? I'll think of it in a minute. He owned an advertising. I can't remember what he was part of her legal team, and I don't know if Doug Jones was involved. Doug may have been involved as well. We had some big hitters, and we put her on trial. It was the most. It was really one of the bigger moments in the show's history. And I think I was the judge, and I ruled that she had violated the policy of the show, and we gave her a lifetime ban, of which the next day I decided that she had I'd overturned it and said, we gave her time served, so she was back. But that's one of the moments when Phyllis went from just a crazy caller. But as I was talking to Christopher today, and I know you were there, I want to see if you remember this. The year before, Bob, there had been some I'm not talking about the 2011 Tuscaloosa tornadoes. I'm talking about 1998. There was a devastating tornado. I think it hit Pleasant Grove. Am I right?
Paul, it basically took a great portion of Pleasant Grove out.
Yeah, it may have been
a suburb, a sister city with Mulga.
Right. So Phyllis was close to it. So, I mean, this was a terrible storm. Many people tragically perished. And Phyllis just started working out there. And I think it was you, me, and it may have been one of your sons. I can't remember.
It was Will. That's right.
And we decided... we wanted to see what it looked like because we talked about it a lot. And in full disclosure, I thought we were going to do just a celebrity drive-by. What I mean by that is, and this happens sometimes in a terrible storm, well-known people will go out. And they do that because they want to be able to know what it looked like, so when they communicate with an audience, it brings it a little closer to home, and that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to go out there, look at it, make sure we understood the severity of it in the real world sense. So we got out there, and Bob, I didn't dress for a day of cleanup. I dressed for pictures, and we're going to walk around.
Photo op.
Yeah, it was a photo op. I'm glad you helped me there. And we're just mugging for a few cameras and talking to a few people. And Phyllis just started screaming, and I won't use the upset, but I'm pretty sure she said, I didn't bring you guys out here to take pictures. I brought you guys out here to work, and if you're not going to work, just get your ass out of here right now.
Nice way to put it, Paul. very nice way to put it. And but Paul, let me say this to your credit. When we started driving in there, you were aghast. I mean, you just... I looked over at you, and it just—you almost looked pale. It was just such a devastating scene, and yes, Phyllis jerked us into gear.
Bob, talk a little bit about the evolution of callers, because she was by far the best known until Tammy came along, and I think they shared equal billing. But how did that happen?
Well, Paul, I think there's no question Phyllis, Chris's mom, was the pioneer. I mean, I was talking to a dear friend of ours today, a mutual friend of ours today, and he said, such a pioneer. And that hit, but I think what happened, Paul, and to your credit, 30 something years ago and today, the way you nurture your callers, and the way you, develop callers and let them develop. That's what happened with Phyllis. And that's what happened with a variety of other callers, Chris from Gulf Shores, different people. We got to know them. Paul, I'll never forget us visiting Phyllis at St. Vincent's Hospital. And it was a traumatic day. It was in one of her first battles with illness. And I saw the bond between the two of you. and then with her family. And then that sort of set the prototype as to how it continued to evolve from that point forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never forget, you encouraged me to go down there, and I really, I wasn't sure, and we ended up doing it, and it became, one of the great memories and connections that the two of us had. I want to say in full disclosure, it wasn't always easy with Phyllis. She had a lot of issues, and this the community of this program got together often and helped and tried to help as much as we could. In fact, she would later years she appeared on ESPN, and the SEC Network did a piece on her, which we'll try to show tomorrow. And then she faded away from calling, and I never completely understood what was going on. I thought she was upset, but Christopher told me today, Bob, that she one reason she didn't call as much, she had serious pulmonary issues, as anyone who's read about her today knows, and she just didn't feel as comfortable, and I understand that. I'm sorry about it, though.
Well, I know you are, Paul, but it was, it's just life, and I think Phyllis was, she ran out of gas, and what happened was, too, she couldn't communicate well. We stayed in touch, and she really had a tough time just conversing, from a pulmonary standpoint, and she just wasn't going to go there as far as coming on the air.
No, and I don't know. I think we all. There's a lot of really torn emotions today because Tammy was a little bit different. I mean, Tammy was taken from us way too soon, like about 40 years too soon, and
just in a moment, gone.
Where this was more of unfortunately the way life is, but. I don't know. In my mind, she and Tammy really stand alone. There are amazing callers to the show and have always been since day one, but these are two that when the show's last breath that does occur, they will be on the top shelf of people, of callers that are remembered.
Oh, I totally agree, Paul, and I think you've got callers now. You'll have new callers, but again, as a pioneer, and then Tammy followed, and I think Phyllis was so proud of the way the show had evolved. She felt her part, but it just got toward the well. She wasn't up to it.
Well, She has her moments, and they will be forever remembered. And I've been tied up most of the afternoon with some people, but I've had an occasional chance to peek at some of the numerous articles that have come out with some of the links. And if you've never heard Phyllis, and if you've never heard her, you have no earthly idea what we're talking about.
That's right. There was only one Phyllis, and Paul, you've mentioned Coach Stallings. I mean, the relationship that Coach Stallings had with Christopher and his mom and their family. And I talked to Linda Knowles earlier today, and she was going to be connecting Coach Stallings with Christopher. Such a genuine, unique relationship that whole family had. There's not going to be another Chris's mom.
Well, Bob, we're in your debt for coming on and helping us remember Phyllis. We'll certainly open it up to all the other callers in a moment. We'll intersect and intersperse guests along the way. But be well, Bob. Hope to see you soon.
Paul, thanks for the invitation, and I'll be tuned right in.
Bob Lockamy, who was there at the very, very beginning of this show and on its first broadcast and played a big part in getting it lifted into outer space. We remember Phyllis today as we take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are remembering Phyllis today, and we're going to try to talk to a lot of you folks who knew her or we haven't heard from in a while. And I see a name up there. Am I reading this name correctly? It begins with a B. Is that you?
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Yeah, how are you doing?
It's B.O.B. Beautiful day, isn't it?
Why? It is a beautiful day.
I heard Locke and me on the air. I didn't know if he was alive or dead, and after I heard him on the air, I still ain't sure.
Well, he is alive. The better question was, where have you been for the last 15 years?
Don't you worry about that, Bob. Me and Jim, we know how to put you in check. Let me tell you something. We're going to put little old Nicky Satan in the freezer, baby. He's shaking. He's going to have the rest of that comb over is going to be gone after we're done with him. You know it and I know it. All God children know it.
Well,
I tell you what, I can't wait till we get a hold of him down in Tiger Town at a little old shrimp festival. We're going to take care of him. He ain't going to be here that much longer. We put him in the freezer, baby.
Well, it's so great to hear you're remembering Phyllis well. We're all impressed.
Well, I remember Phyllis. I wasn't all that kind to her, so I wasn't going to say a whole lot about her, but I did hear old Lockamy, and I had to call and say something about him. Not that I could say anything good about him, but I just had to call, and I had to tell you, bring on Bama, B-O-B. Bring on Bama.
Logan is up next. Hey, Logan.
Hey, Paul. I just wanted to send my condolences out to Phyllis's family. I tell you, I started listening to your show, I think, after the heyday of Phyllis and Tammy. I do remember when Tammy passed, the shock of that, and I didn't really get to hear a lot of recalls. I don't know, Phyllis, the thing I remember about her, and I think this was Phyllis. Was she the one that used to call out Colin Cowherd?
Yeah, I mean, and we'll get some of those on later. She is the one that probably the most famous Phyllis call of all time, and it's everywhere. When she called him Colin Cowherd.
Right, I remember that because I was thinking, man, somebody because he can be so pretentious sometimes, and she was just like some lady from Alabama that was calling him out, and I think he really affected him. You could tell on his program. He had a lot of respect for her and her for her knowledge of the Tide because she kind of like – I don't remember if they did a special on her, if she went head-to-head with Colin or what, but it was –
Now, I tell you what happened, though. When Alabama lost to Ohio State, she called in that next day. And I kid you not, ESPN SportsCenter ended up running the clip of that. I saw it. That's when SportsCenter was on 24 hours a day on ESPN
right.
News and ESPN.
Right.
They literally ran that cut, that tape for 24 straight hours.
Okay, that's what I thought because I saw that call and I remember cracking up. That was hilarious. So I can't really share too many memories of her other than that.
Well, no, she has not called in. That was really the last episode that she was a regular caller, and then she got sick. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Let's check out Pat next. Hey, Pat.
Hi, Paul. How are you today?
We are doing great, Pat.
I just called to give my condolences and my prayers about to Phyllis's family about her passing away.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much.
And I really enjoyed her calls when she would call in, and I miss them here last few years, and I'll be missing her.
Well, thank you. You be well. You take care of yourself. John is up next in Louisville.
Hey, good afternoon, and first, of course, condolences to the family and friends, including you and the other callers. Can I ask, is she the one that's in your intro song that mentions Jerry Springer?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Well, she sounds like just one heck of a great lady. I have a Georgia question if you have the time.
Sure.
If I'm not disrespecting her. I see that Georgia had its fourth player arrested, but More notably, I noticed that the father of Devin Willicks has now gone that extra step, as I had mentioned he would last month, and he's suing the UGA Athletic Association, the state of Chandler LaCroix, the strip club, of course, and Jalen Carter, where there's money. My question is, UGA Athletic Association, what do they do, and how would they reference to this lawsuit?
Well, I don't know. That's certainly a legal issue that will have to be determined. That's probably the group that pays a lot of the salaries and the ancillary things. I'm sure that's where they're going there. A lot of that to be determined, though. Hey, thanks, John. We're up against a break. We'll talk to the youngest football coach in the country and continue our tribute to Phyllis after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.